Good morning. It's me again. It's almost 5 a.m. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. At this point, I feel if I do another Little Saigon podcast, it's freaking Sunday morning, April the 14th, 2019. If I do another podcast, I'm either gonna stay up and go to church, or I'll go to sleep and I'll miss church. I think I really screwed up last week. I decided to volunteer at church to help out in the booth in the back, the tech booth, and I was in charge of the lighting, and I think I just screwed up a couple times. So I don't even know if they want to see me back there at church. It's possible that they don't. It's possible that I will be asked to leave soon. I don't know. Everyone's welcome at church. I like the church I go to. I'm kind of kidding right now. It's just, I know that God does not want to hear me say this. I know Jesus does not want to hear me say this, but I don't feel like going to church today. I don't. I'm in a weird place. I'm not really depressed. I'm not really happy. I finished a week at work, but not quite a full week. I am barely treading water, but I'm starting to see the shoreline. There's a chance, I don't know, in a couple weeks I'll probably say, "Oh crap, I got some money and I'm gonna be okay." And maybe I think to myself a year from now, "Oh, everything's normal." But I know that things are not normal, and I know that it's not going to get more normal in the future. I know that people want to believe that, but it's not gonna happen. And no Excuse me, my throat's a little bit sketchy or dry. I don't think. Excuse me, God, that's bad. I don't think we're going to negotiate with reality. I don't think we're going to ask the world to slow down or to change. And I don't think it's going to change. I'm not going to go off in a religion right now, but in terms of the world, you're talking about the human race. And you're talking about a lot of power. And people, listen, the history of history, in some ways, the history of humanity, is about these murder power schemes. These, ways in which people pile on power and structure and bureaucracy and control so that they can be at the top of the heap. And then what? What's your life at that point? If you have everything you need, if you have everything provided for you, if the machine provides everything that you need, then what else? What do you actually need? I don't know. I don't know. Anyways, so there are a couple topics that linger. One has to do with Julian Assange. I don't know how much I want to talk about that one because it's just really dark. And the other relates to death. So I was listening to, Guy McPherson, and he was talking about when he first understood or experienced the knowledge that one day he would be dead. And it reminded me, I think I was 10 or 11. I think I was 11. I think it was 1981. But I was at Catholic school. And one of the girls in our class got sick and she died. She got basically, I think it was meningitis. I think it was bacterial meningitis, but it could have been viral. But she just got sick and died. And it was one of those things where a week before at recess, she was out playing with all of us and she was alive. And as I recall, and not that this is a relevant issue, but I recall she was a pretty girl. She wasn't ugly. I mean, not that being ugly is good or bad, but I recall that she was a pretty girl and she was alive and she was 11 years old, just like me. And then a week later, she was dead. And I have this memory of being out at the grotto at Immaculate Conception School. And when she was in the hospital, I think it was when she was still in the hospital, we were praying for her. So it was before she was actually dead. She was just a day from being dead. And we're out at the grotto praying, and it's outside. And a car goes by, and I think it's a springtime, and the Jake Giles band is playing. I think it's playing Freeze Frame. It's one of the ways in which I can kind of gauge the time frame of this memory. And I don't know. I think I understood that I was mortal before that point, but when you realize that someone your age could be dead, that it could happen, that they could be snuffed out, it is a kind of interesting experience. Several years ago, when my sister Nancy died of cancer, I had a kind of similar experience, not the same. Because even though I'd always known, yeah, you're going to be mortal, I knew that at least since that moment back in 1981, but I always knew that, yes, we're all going to die. I always had this feeling that, well, at least I'll make a name for myself. At least I will have some success. At least I won't be a total failure before I die. It was always my hope I would be a father and have a family before my mom died. Well, she died, when I was 40, and I hadn't even remotely started a family yet. And again, I can't blame anyone but myself. This is just my own reality. But I'd always thought, so when my sister Nancy died a couple years after my mom, it was one of those experiences of, you know what? You could die at any time, and everything could be just a big question mark of nothing. And I will tell you, it was about the time, I guess you could say, I got my religion. I don't know if you want to call it a classic, you're in the foxhole and you're, think you're going to die, so now you find God. It really wasn't that. It was just more of the secular view of the world that I've been given. That I had practiced my whole life, that Catholicism had driven me into, was really just a big empty nothing. That there was nothing there. That at the end of the day, if you were a rational materialist atheist, like I had been my whole life, the only thing you're left with is a chunk of fat floating in some water in a bone cave, which is your brain, which is you, and there's nothing else. Yeah, you've got perception and you can trust reality. And if somebody said, hey, I just went to Paris, France, and you've never been to Paris, France, you can say, well, shit, there must be a Paris, France. But other than that, you really don't know much. And you really don't even know if there's a Paris, France if you've never been there. So the reality is, if you're a rational materialist atheist, even though you could claim, well, I have all these facts, Dan, and I have all these pictures and all these telescopes and all of this data. Well, you have all that, and that is true, but you don't have much. It's kind of a big empty nothing. When my sister Nancy died, it was kind of like, fuck, I will probably die, and my life will be a failure. It'll be a pile of mediocre attempts at being something that I was never going to be. And in some ways, that's more harsh than realizing you're going to die. Because, yeah, everyone's going to die, but what do you do when you say to yourself, I'm going to die and I leave nothing behind but garbage? I'm going to die, but the only thing I'm going to leave behind is a bunch of soiled clothing. That's it. That's what death means for me. I will die and I have no kids, I have no progeny. So whatever I am in these material biological terms ends with me. That's what happens when I die. And really, that was a lot harder to deal with than just the notion of death. It's in some ways it's kind of easy to accept death if you've done all the stuff you think you were supposed to do. But what if you reach a certain point in your life and you're 50 years old? And most of what's inside of you is sawdust and broken glass and riprap and chunks of rebar and concrete and a stone where your heart used to be and regret, and it's all sewed up, and that's all that you are. And there are no kids, there is no great treaties that you wrote, you made no great discovery, you wrote no great chunks of code, there is no great app or social media site you created. You are a big nothing. You are a middle-aged, burned-out computer programmer on his way to diabetes, cancer, heart disease, COPD, you name it. That's what you are. That's way harder to take than simple death. Because simple death is simple death. I mean, if you're a rational materialist dude, you can say it's just like somebody threw a switch. One moment you're on, the next moment you're off. That's it. There's nothing else. But if you say to yourself, but even as a rational materialist, if you say to yourself, well, at least I could have a legacy. Well, if you have no legacy, then there's nothing. So anyways, I don't know why I'm talking about death. I think, I just don't know why. Part of death is also, and this happens a lot, part of the notion of death or loss is giving up on things that we need to let go of, like learning to let go, like bad ideas, bad paradigms. For years and years and years, and for a very long time, I was suckered into believing, and I think I was suckered. I allowed myself to be suckered, which means I was part of that dance. I'm partly to blame. But I was suckered into believing that all of the global warming stuff was just propaganda. That essentially there was some kind of conspiracy amongst quasi-socialists and communists at universities to convince us that CO2 is bad and that the earth is heating up and it's all bullshit. Here's my judgment call on the subject. I don't really know what's true at this point. It seems apparent to me, like yesterday, and I'm not exaggerating, yesterday, I think I've mentioned this before. My apartment specifically looks right into one of the flight paths, you know, for SeaTac Airport. So I see jets coming in every 5 minutes all day long from where I sit in my apartment. Yesterday, one of these planes, and I think it was only a few thousand feet above me, had its spray nozzles on. And if you follow the work of Dane Wigington, you know what I mean by that. I could see it spraying. This was not condensation trails, okay? These were tiny little streams of gunk that were being sprayed out. It was almost like the system that was designed to do it, probably controlled from someplace else, probably the pilots don't even know about it. The system for doing this probably glitched out, and it was dumping material, and I could see the streams of this material. It's like, holy fuck, they have no shame. But I also realized that every other human in Seattle is staring at a little glowing rectangle. They don't look up. They stare gormlessly into the abyss of that tiny little chunk of silicon and glass and metal. They stare at their smart device and they never look up. So they could not see this. It would never happen. They won't be gobsmacked by that reality. They simply accept the reality they've been given. Part of dealing with death, or I should say loss, is learning when to give up on a bad idea. That can also be a kind of transition. It can be a loss. If you believed in Santa Claus as a kid, and you used to hope and pray that Santa Claus would bring you presents, and then one day you realize not only does Santa Claus not exist, but there are these things called recessions, and people lose their jobs, and sometimes parents don't have money to buy you the brand new Atari console that you want. That's reality. You have to give up on Santa Claus. You also might have to give up on the notion that life will be stable or predictable, that life might actually be chaos, that you might find yourself struggling to exist one day, and you might have a lot of cash the next, and it can be like that. Or maybe you end up in a household where everything is stable, and so from your perspective, instability is impossible. All you have to do is properly manage your credit score, and everything will be fine. There are people like that, and there are people who live most of their lives like that. I know these people. They're not bad people, but they've never experienced very much economic instability, so their paradigm is perfectly intact. So yeah, giving up on bad ideas is part of this. Julian Assange is part of this, believe it or not. And I don't mean personally, I don't know the guy. But the whole WikiLeaks phenomena is part of this giving up on paradigms and experiencing loss. And I would include Trump's election. You know, when Trump was elected, I remember telling people this. I remember saying to people on Twitter, probably this is one of the reasons I was banned. I remember putting this into maybe one of my old YouTube videos, you could find it. But bottom line is, I remember telling people, in 2016, and it may have been just after he won the election, that it was more likely in 2 years that Julian Assange would be in jail and Hillary would be free. And people looked at me, I shouldn't say looked at me, people would respond on Twitter and respond via YouTube and send me an email. And in cases of talking in person, look at me and say, Dan, come on, Donald Trump is going to be really friendly to Assange, and Assange helped him. Assange is a truth teller, and Donald Trump is a truth teller. You're full of shit. And here we are, 2019. Julian Assange is in jail, and Hillary Clinton is free. And that's all you need to fucking know about voting and elections and Donald Trump and all the other presidents before him. Whatever he is, he's not as advertised. None of them are. I'm not even sure these bozos have any actual power. I am reasonably convinced they're just part of the Pez dispenser of deception. They pop out when needed. They provide zero nutritional value. They don't really do anything. They are part of the Pez dispenser of the American political system. They are nothing. Okay? Donald Trump is a second-rate actor. Obama was a second-rate actor. These are actors. These are performers. If you think that Donald Trump, or if you believe that Donald Trump was going to change the world, I feel sorry for you, but you still have a process to go through. That denial, anger, bargaining thing. You're gonna rationalize the Assange thing. You're gonna do it for a few weeks, maybe even a few months. But if you have a heart, if you have a soul, if you have a mind, you're gonna come to realize that you were basically treated like a chump. Okay? It wasn't just Hillary that thought you were deplorable. It turns out they all think you're deplorable. They all hate you. If you think Trump liked you, if you think Trump was looking out for the little guy, you're a fool. Trump is looking out for the military-industrial complex. Trump is looking out for the state of Israel. Trump is looking out for the banks. Trump is looking out for the wealthy and the powerful. Trump could not give a fuck about you if he had any power anyways, and he doesn't. But even if he had power, he could not give a fuck. But that's the thing, with the Julian Assange phenomena, with the fact that he's now in jail, a Trump voter has to go through this whole process of dealing with cognitive dissonance. How do you make sense of this? What will Q tell you? You know, the Q thing is ridiculous. I don't know why people go on to 4chan or 8chan or whatever chan and try to decipher that Q bullshit. It's not even as good as fucking Clown Adamus. At least Clown Adamus attempted to have some literary value. The fucking Q stuff is total bullshit. What is Q going to tell you about Assange? Well, Assange was really part of a deep Hillary, deep state control node. Whatever, dude. If Julian Assange ends up in a dark hole, or better yet, if he ends up suicided, which I think is at this point, because I don't think anybody in authority can afford to give Julian Assange his day in court. The most likely outcome is he gets a heart attack or gets a diabetic episode or gets some type of fast cancer. The most likely outcome is an aneurysm or a stroke for Mr. Assange. Maybe he hangs himself, and I'm using sarcastic quotes right now. That's way more likely than Julian Assange ever getting a day in court. In fact, I will adjust my prediction. I said that it was more likely 2 years ago, almost 3 years ago, really. I said it was more likely that Hillary would be free today and Assange would be in jail. I will make another prediction. At this point, it is way more likely that Assange ends up dead than that he ever, ever, ever sees a day in court. And, oh, you could say, well, Americans or the world, they wouldn't put up with it. Listen, they have been putting up with it my whole fucking life. They've been putting up with it. They suckle on the propaganda tit as if it was mother's milk. Okay? They stare down at their little glowing rectangle. They don't look up at the sky. You're going to tell me that these schlubs are going to have a hard time processing this? No. They'll process it like they process every other fucking stupid thought that gets into their stupid heads from their little smart device. That's reality. Now, for a lot of people who haven't been through the whole process yet, who haven't learned to deal with loss, kind of like what Max KD, you know, kind of like what Max KD talks about in Cape Fear, you got to learn to deal with loss. A lot of people have not learned to deal with loss yet. They have not learned to accept that the world that they believe is solid could actually be not so solid, could actually be fragile, could actually fall apart around them. But they will have to learn to deal with this. Julian Assange going to jail means one simple fact, that whatever you thought was going to happen with Donald Trump was never going to fucking happen. And now with the bullshit with Venezuela and the continued military bullshit, and I'm sorry, this whole, well, he took troops out of Syria. Listen, we were never going to be able to succeed in Syria. That's called a retreat. And it's not that I supported the Syrian thing, just the opposite. I thought it was all imperial militaristic bullshit. And that goes back to Obama, okay, not Trump. But the bottom line is this. We are a military empire. We are technically in retreat. Arguably, the first sign of decline was a couple of decades ago during the first Gulf War. Really, almost 30 years ago now. That was the first sign of decline. You know, it's funny, people say, they'll look back upon the early 90s and say, well, fall of Berlin Wall, the end of the Soviet Union. But in a lot of ways, our empire also started falling apart about the same time. And that first Gulf War that we won, some people look at that as a sign of strength. No, 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 no. That was a sign of weakness. Actual strength means you could avoid the war. We couldn't. We had to fight it. That was not a sign of strength, folks. So yeah, you know, a lot of people are processing this Julian Assange thing, and they're going to wait for Q to tell them what to think. And Q's going to come out and say, well, Assange was part of some kind of horrible deep control grid thingy and blah, blah, blah. And if Assange does get killed, Q will say, well, Assange was killed by Hillary and her operatives. But it won't be the reality, folks. The reality is, you were taken advantage of. You were conned. When you went into that voting booth, you thought you were exercising your will. But the reality was that was bullshit. You weren't doing anything. Those buttons you push weren't connected to anything. It reminds me of when I first started programming computers and I did web programming. And I would work on a web page. And I already had the code written so that things were auto-saved. So you don't need a save button. The code was written to save things automatically. And this woman in a meeting said, well, Dan, I know it works, I'm sure it works, but can you still put a button up there that says save? And if that's the reality, folks, that the button that says save isn't connected to anything, and the voting booth process is not connected to anything. The only thing it's connected to is your ego, and the ego of the crocodile, and the ego of the government as a structure. It's connected to reinforcing the lie, but beyond that, it's connected to nothing. And even if it worked, even if voting worked, even if you as part of a mob could go into a booth and make a choice and exercise your will, what would that really fucking mean? All it means is you've chosen to do mob warfare by other means. You've chosen to use force against your neighbor by delegating the force, but you're still using force. You're still being a dick. That's the reality, that even if democracy, quote unquote, worked, even if our republic worked, even if the voting worked, it would still be one mob beating up on another for all time. If you think that's success, if you think that's some type of brilliant outcome for humanity, you're a fool. If you think mobs of people can be less capricious than tyrants, no, they can be just as bad. Often, mobs are worse, but at least as bad. And eventually, somebody ends up becoming the dictator of the mob anyways. So yeah. Learn about death, learn about loss, just like Max KD, You know, I think Robert De Niro played him in the reboot. Max KD, you need to learn about loss. Counselor, you need to learn about loss. Cape Fear, the reboot. I think that was 1990. Great film. Highly recommended. And on that note, I'm going to let you go to prepare for Sunday morning. It's coming. It's coming around the corner.